Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Denver's Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Happy Friday, weekend upon you. Preseason coming to an end, finally. Nice having one fewer preseason game. Now, granted, every team's approaching it differently, including the Broncos, but the regular season will be on us sooner than we know it. Sean Drocher and Troy Rank with you. Doak and Zach are off. And Troy, now you look at this quarterback decision. Teddy Bridgewater is the quarterback. I think you and I both agree that was the right choice for a couple different reasons. And the next question then is, now that that decision has been made, how does it impact the Broncos' bottom line? For example, out there in Vegas, the, roughly, people have the Broncos winning, let's say, 8.5 games, right? That sounds about right. And I think that's about where they are. But does adding Teddy Bridgewater give them the best chance to exceed that? Was that going to be the case? I mean, and if so, why does he give them a better chance? Because there's so many people over on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. They reach out on Twitter. That's S. Drotar if you want. Of course, Troy is Troy Rank. And I would say that the fan base was about 90% for Drew Lock, 9 out of 10, maybe even more than that. And a little confused as to why they make that move. But do you feel that Bridgewater gives them the best chance to say, there's no 8-8s anymore? So you really, there's no kissing your sister. You're either going to be a winning team or a losing team. This position being Bridgewater's, the presumption is that makes you likelier to be a winning team, right?
Well, the argument for that would be, Sean, that he could win maybe a couple games for you that you might not, but he won't lose any games you should win. And that's what hurt Locke last year is, you know, he played poorly, just awful in the second half against the Raiders in Vegas. Awful against the Chiefs at home, awful against the Bills at home, and frankly, his play against Atlanta lost that game. That was a winnable game, and his interceptions there won to Judy over the middle of the field. So that would be the argument for there's a little more predictability of performance. You know, you look at his touchdown to interception ratio. It's not great. I'm not selling you on Teddy as something special. I mean, it reminds me of vacation when they're looking at the family truckster and like, you hate it now. Wait till you drive it. Now, listen, they got some issues. Listen, Teddy is Teddy. I'm not going to sell this as something it's not. Can he be a guy, though, that wins a few games for you by game manager, protect the ball? Look no further than an Alex Smith with the Chiefs.
Right.
Like one year he was like 26 touchdowns and 5 picks. There was nothing sexy about his play. No slit in the skirt, nothing. Nothing sexy about it. What he did was protect the football and leave them in position to win all the time. And so if Teddy does that, it won't probably be that. But if it's 22-10, and then in the second half, in the fourth quarter, Von Miller gets a strip sack. Chubb gets a strip sack. Justin Simmons, who I think is going to be their team MVP, has an interception. That's how you can win. That is the formula. I'm not saying that's how I would do it. I'd want a more dynamic offense because I want to be able to wake up every Sunday and say, we're getting our 25 and take our chances.
But they don't have a guy for that. They just don't.
Right. And so I asked George Payton at the draft, is Teddy Bridgewater a guy that can score you 25, 26 points a game? And he said, absolutely. And I know when they acquired him, Sean, there was belief in that building he could get him to 10 wins. That he, Teddy Bridgewater, playing the way he can play, at when he's right, he could get him to 10 wins. So what is the number? I have him going 9-8, chalk. That's what Vegas has him right now. Because, frankly, you look at their home schedule, and it's just easy.
It's almost comical. It really is. I mean, the schedule, if they weren't in the AFC West, I mean, you'd be laughing. Take the division games out of it, and the schedule's hilarious. I mean, you should be able to win an awful lot of games, and the biggest challenge has been a lot of it is basically your division rivals. So if they can go 9-8, then they're going to be in the wild card conversation until the last week of the season.
Right. They'd be playing meaningful games in December.
Right.
That they be, in some ways, they become the Rockies that way. And I know that pains people to hear, but that's the Rockies. You know, we got to play meaningful games in September.
Right.
And but that's the next step for the Broncos. They haven't been 500 in a season, Sean, since Vance Joseph's last year at 6-6, and then they proceeded to lose their final four games.
Right. And, of course, that looms large because, look, the last three games are AFC West games, two of them on the road. You go to Vegas, you go to the Chargers, and then the final game is January 9th against Kansas City. So, I mean, there's potential for a lot of drama there. What will make this season a success? I mean, you have to get better than five games, obviously. But when you look at the goals, if you were to say, try to look in your crystal ball and say it's basically middle of February, you look back at this season and said it was a successful season for the Denver Broncos. What does it look like?
It's, for me, it looks like either they finished 8-9 or 9-8, and they were in it all the way to the end. And that might still lead to coaching change at 9-8. Maybe you look up and go, yeah, there was enough progress, but we're going to bring in Aaron Rodgers and let him handpick the head coach and run his offense. You know, I mean, but what would be a successful season? Being the realist into me says either 8-9 and 9-8, which means you're in it all year, not you start 2-5 and try to go on some crazy run. Because the run at the end of the season at Vegas, at the Chargers, home against Kansas City, that's brutal. Unless Kansas City's clinched, maybe you're okay.
That's your hope. Yeah. Maybe they've clinched and they've got a bye and they might rest people. Of course, you know, it's Andy Reid. He's one of the few coaches like Vic Fangio that's going to be playing the starters. In this preseason game, Patrick Mahomes went into the second quarter last week. You know, there's no guarantee that Reed may not decide, hey, I don't want to lose our timing with 2 weeks off, too.
Right. If they're a wild card, he maybe doesn't. Right. If they've won the division, perhaps he does. But you say, oh, Vegas, they're going to be terrible. They're going to crater this year. Maybe they do. And this is Gruden's last year, and he goes back and calls Monday Night Football. But at Vegas, I watched them go to Vegas last year. And nobody was there, and they got crushed.
Yeah.
They played horse with no name as they came out of the field, and they were right. Broncos, they played fine for about a quarter and a half, and they got absolutely embarrassed, throttled. Jeff Heath, you know, jumping, doing triple Lindy's into the Fountain of Youth. That was, I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, guys that are beating you are, he's not even in the league anymore, I don't think. I mean, that's what I'm saying. When they're losing games, it's not like they're losing games to, oh, my God, this guy had a great game. You look up, it's a guy that had a great game that never really had another good game the rest of the year. But at Vegas, that place is going to be rocking, I would think, the day after Christmas.
Yeah.
That's not an easy win. It's in theory, winnable. At the Chargers, they are the sleeper team in the AFC
Absolutely
West.
Absolutely they are.
If you have one team in the AFC that people think are going to hit the over, and a sleeper team because of their roster, it's the Chargers, not the Broncos. So for me, that's why I'm saying, can the Broncos be the sleeper team in the AFC West, not the Chargers? And the easy answer is no, because why? The Chargers have Justin Herbert. The Broncos don't have a great quarterback. And can their defense be good enough to keep the Broncos relevant? That is the best case scenario for me. Keep them relevant, and you end up 9-8. I'm not going to sit up here and say, I see 11 wins. Terrell Davis, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, you heard we run things through the cruncher, and he's working for NFL Network. He goes, I got 11 wins for him. And I literally stopped, and he's like, I see that look on your face. And I'm like, Terrell,
yeah,
been a bit. And as far as I know, you're not in the backfield. I mean, it's been a bit. You know, I mean, they're closer to the Bubby Brister, Brian Greasy 99 Broncos than they are the 97-98 Broncos. But 11 wins, that means if that is the case, Sean, Teddy Bridgewater has started like 15 of 17 games and has protected the ball, and they have established that they can win 24-21, 26-20, and one of those touchdowns is set up by takeaways. Last year, they only had, 16 takeaways?
Right.
And Simmons had six by himself, and four came in the last game.
Right.
So if you're telling me that they're an 11-win team, that means the offense is carrying its water finally, and the defense is either getting defensive touchdowns or setting them up for easy scores offensively.
That defense for the Denver Broncos, obviously really, really important. The core of the team, where they've invested the most money, it's older. We've talked about the parallel growth path that they're on. And the turnovers you've talked about are a big, big deal for this defense. What does a 2021 defense in the NFL really look like? Can the Broncos be that? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Stokely and Zach, although it is not Stokely and Zach. They're off. I'm Sean Drotar, host of the Fan Late Night, and done to midnight. And with me is number seven, Broncos insider Troy Rank. And Troy, we talked about the defense. This Denver Broncos defense is the sort of backwards in a lot of cases, but that's the engine that makes the Broncos go. Everything that they've built is predicated around this defense keeping them in games. However, the defense maybe needs to do more than that. You pointed out that, that Justin Simmons had six of the Broncos' 16 takeaways. Adding, I think, Pat Surtain will help with that, although getting him on the field can at times may be challenging. But this defense is still not really built to generate turnovers, is it?
Not necessarily the way Vic has traditionally played in the last few years, where if he's going to rely on matchup zone coverage and less blitzing, that isn't in itself an attacking defense, as you and I talked about right off air, a team that's hunting takeaways, that you're willing to take chances realizing that you might give up a big play. Vic's defenses are terrific in the red zone. They do a lot of things well, but they have not turned the ball over. In 2 years under Fangio, they have 33 takeaways. His last season in Chicago, they had 36, led the NFL. It's what got him the job.
Yeah, absolutely.
We haven't seen the takeaways.
And they've brought guys with him. I mean, Bryce Callahan is here. Kyle Fuller is here. I mean, these guys have been brought here because of what they did in that defense, too.
And part of it's the offense. That's why you can't just discount that they're somehow operating in a vacuum.
Right.
They're not. They need the team to be close and, if possible, lead games, because it puts you in a much better position to take chances and get takeaways, and it makes the other team assume and carry risks that they normally wouldn't carry. But to your point, Sean, as we've talked about off air, is there is a point, too, you have to go get them.
Yeah.
You can't wait for something. It's like the old sit around and wait for the 3-run home run. Some points you got to just manufacture a run. We got to do a hit and run. We got to put the runner in motion. We can't just stand around and let this pitcher strike us all out. We're going to put the ball on the ground. We're going to bunt it. We're going to do something. So at some point, too, and we saw that with Vic against the Patriots, the way they went after Tua with the Dolphins, where he was blitzing more. I believe they have the versatility and coverage this year with Surtain, who would play for me about 70% of the snaps because he'll be in nickel, he will be in dime. They have the versatility, and with Ronald Darby, who's quietly had a great camp, to play a little more man, mix and match, and blitz. Corner blitz, safety blitz, because you're going to trust leaving a couple of these guys on an island. And I don't know about Fuller. Can he get back to who he was in 18? I got to see it. But they will have versatility and coverage that should allow them to take chances, where you send a backer, where you send a safety, you send a corner blitz because you like the help on the backside. And I think Vic needs to do that. Stop sitting around and waiting for stuff to happen. That is one of my biggest complaints about the Broncos the last few years. They are so reactionary. At some point, throw the first punch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly right. It's a reactionary defense, and the fact that you build it around, in theory, two of the league's more fearsome pass rushers, why not take it to them? I mean, we talk about the idea of Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. Finally, maybe together they're healthy. They can look like they looked the first year they were together as blitzers. You know that Shelby Harris can add pressure. Draymond Jones, I expect him to be the breakout player for the Denver Broncos this year. I think he's primed to have a terrific season. There are enough guys that can bring heat, and you can even, like you said, you can blitz the occasional safety here and there too. So if Vic Fangio, after all of this time in the NFL as a defense coordinator, if he kind of is what he is there any reason to believe that given the Broncos personnel, which should be able, it kind of looks like the roster's built to wreak a little bit of a habit, to throw that first punch, like you said, is there any reason to believe that it will change?
I think we will see some change in Vic because of the personnel. If he had the similar personnel and they were a little light and compromised at corner, I'd say no. But they have the ability at corner, Sean, to take chances.
Yeah.
You can trust Ronald Darby and man. He's better in man than zone.
He's not a guy that's gotten a lot of interceptions.
No, but he's good in coverage.
But he's
in
good
man.
Coverage, right.
Kyle Fuller, if you decide that he looks like he used to, you can trust him in man and
sure.
Leave him on an island here and there. Justin Simmons, You can trust him on the backside to send Kareem Jackson on a blitz once in a while. I just think the personnel is going to present him with chances. Maybe I'm being naive to think he'll take them. But Vic Fangio back in the day used to blitz, and then his style changed throughout the years. It's not like he never blitzed. He did. And it's not like he's never played man coverage. He has. And with this defensive starting unit, as you mentioned, Draymond Jones, Shelby Harris, Chubb, Miller, the questions are at inside linebacker, frankly, with Alexander Johnson and, right. and Josie Jewell, specifically in coverage. But you've got Baron Browning. You've got Justin Sternad, who I just interviewed shameless plug for my Broncos podcast with Troy Ring. You got Sternad now. You've got Browning, who might be their niche guys in coverage against Darren Waller or Kelsey. And you've got arguably the best secondary in the NFL.
Yes. Yes.
If Fuller rebounds in a meaningful way and is good, and Callahan's just kind of healthy, you have the best secondary in the NFL.
Which means that means you should be taking chances. And we didn't even mention the Broncos sack leader last year, Malik Reed.
So gives you depth.
It gives you depth.
Jonathan
there.
Cooper gives you depth.
Right. Those guys can go ahead and give the Miller and Chubb a little bit of break. You can still go hunting for it. And
Vic, real quick, he needs to trust his depth at defense. He's got to play more guys at outside linebacker and mix it in at inside linebacker because I don't want to see Vaughn playing 90% of the snaps.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about how he's good in run defense. He's 33. Play him as a situational pass rusher in some games. I don't want to see him play a bunch of snaps. I need him to make the big play in the third and fourth quarter. That's where Von Miller wins you games, not by turning a 5-yard run into a 4-yard run in the middle of third quarter. I don't need Von Miller for that. I'm paying him to get the quarterback. And that's where you've got to trust Cooper and Malik Reed to get some snaps, to keep Chubb and Miller fresh when the other tackles are wearing down.
I look at this defense a little bit and I see some shades. Now, they don't have a Bobby Wagner. That would be great if they did. They do not have a Bobby Wagner. But they... Seattle defense that beat the Broncos Super Bowl 48. Similarities. So hard-hitting safeties, some good cover corners, the ability to pass rush both from the line and the linebacker position, and the genius of that defense, remember they used to call it their NASCAR package. Pete Carroll trusted his depth. So these guys were fresh all the time. When you needed one of those pass rushes, that guy was ready. He hasn't been run into the ground. And the Broncos can be that. George Payton, in 1 year, give him extraordinary credit for adding to the depth of this team, because in the last few years, the Broncos have always seemed a little confused that the season didn't end up like they thought, and it's almost exclusively been because of a lack of depth, and one injury happens, and everything falls apart. Payton has already, in one offseason, solved that on the defensive side, which is remarkable. You're right. Now it's up for Fangio to actually make use of it. And that requires a change. So as we get ready for this season, this team is set up as a defensive, potentially a defensive juggernaut, and an offense that is at least competent. This is essentially the team that Vic Fangio wanted. So does he have any more excuses left? What does he have to do this season? We'll talk about it next.
Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Now that feels like Friday. That's a Friday right there. Football Friday, the Broncos going into their final preseason game against Troy. Players wearing Rams uniforms. I don't know if we're necessarily going to call it the Rams, because in week two, Sean McVay had 36 inactive players. The Broncos are going to go with some of their starters because they do need wins in September. You explained that a little earlier in the show. If you missed any of it, by the way, you can always go to denverfan.com. You can download any parts of the program. You can download the whole program. And everybody else's, by the way, you can easily subscribe on denverfan.com or use the Fan app to catch up on all of those. So the thing that you mentioned about the starters, Teddy Bridgewater's going to play, Cortland Sutton's going to play, Von Miller's going to play. Some of these guys would like to scrape off some rust, and I understand that. And there is a risk there, but you pointed out that Vic Fangio needs a fast start. He needs wins. This roster, as it's comprised, does have depth. The defense, look, nobody ever has the perfect team. Would they like to be a little better at middle linebacker? Yeah, but guess what? Nobody has the perfect defense. That's life. This is a good defense on paper. It is deep. It is solid. You have an offensive line that, yeah, right tackle still, but a spot. But if Bobby Massey stays healthy, that's handled for at least this year. There's promise there. We know about the weapons across the offense from multiple running backs, multiple tight ends, multiple receivers. And now you have a quarterback that at least seems to play Vic Fangio's style of let's get points when it's available, but let's not make the mistakes in Teddy Bridgewater. There doesn't seem to be any excuses left for Vic Fangio this season.
No, George Payton gave him the defense to win with, and they have a veteran quarterback who, whether you like him or not, Teddy has a track record. He's winning games in this league. He's been to the playoffs. It's not perfect, but this is a team. If you just look at their 22 that they roll out on game day, if you talk to talent evaluators, which I have, their rosters, those starting 22 stack up really well against a lot of teams. With the caveat being that the huge question at quarterback.
Right.
But even if you look at the Chiefs, they're 10 versus the Broncos 10 on offense. The Chiefs defense, they're 11 versus the Broncos 11. And I was taking the quarterback Mahomes out. Broncos stack up well against these teams, but they've got to prove it, Sean. We keep talking about this and this formula of we're going to try to win with defense. Do you have a defense that can allow you to win games, but don't fall into the trap of we're going to win with defense. You don't win with defense during the regular season.
No.
You win with defense in the playoffs, and those are one-off games, and you win with defensive moments, but you still, during the course of a regular season, have to be able to score 25 points a game. Every rule in this league is set up to score points.
All of them.
Last year was an historic season for touchdowns, points scored, completion percentage.
Holding was down almost 40% because they de-emphasized it.
Right. So stop saying we're going to win with defense. That's like, I'm going to put the tech world on its head with my flip phone. It's not happening.
Yeah.
You're not winning with defense. You can win games with defense, but you're not going to win consistently week to week with it. So don't fall into the trap that, oh, look at our defense. No. The focus needs to be on this offense scoring 25 points a game. And maybe it's three touchdowns and a field goal, and they pick up a cheap score from their defense. That's how you win. Not, we're going to score 17 points and hope our defense scores a touchdown every week. No.
So, nine.
No excuses.
You suggested 9-8 was where the Broncos land. Is that enough? Would that be enough to save Vic Fangio's job?
Depends on how you get there, probably. Like, let's say, theoretically, you beat the Lions and the Bengals in
Better
December.
Better beat the Lions and Bengals.
And you're at that point, you're 9-5, and then you lose out. That's where it gets weird because you're at Vegas, at the Chargers, home against KC, and maybe KC's sitting guys then. But is he safe at 9-8? I always say it's how you get to that number, because if you're 9-5 and you lose the final three games and you miss the playoffs, maybe not. I would say probably not. But if you're 9-8 and you do it by beating the Chargers and Chiefs to end the season, maybe that is enough. I just think minimum you got to have a winning record, because the number of first-time head coaches in the NFL who start their career with three straight losing seasons, how many of them survive? It's in modern history, it's almost zero. You've got to, by the third year, you've got to turn it around.
Yeah, yeah. And in Fangio's case, it's important because, look, to a certain extent, age is a factor. If you're one of those people that you got your first coaching shot at 37, 38, and it bombed, you may get another one. In Fangio's case, he's probably not going to get another one. I mean, this is it. And there are things that he has to be better at. We saw clock mismanagement in the last 2 years that didn't quite frankly get a lot better. Timeout management that hasn't really gotten a lot better. Even things like figuring out when to use a replay or not challenges has not really gotten better. Some of these, and maybe I'm being too harsh here, Troy, help me out, because I look at especially the clock management issues. I think that's coaching 101. I mean, you have to be able to know when to use your timeouts. You have to be able to know when you need to run plays to the side. You have to know these things. And it seems like, to me, it baffles me that Vic Fangio has had any of these issues with the clock, let alone two straight years.
Well, I will say this. Outside of Belichick, I'm trying to think of defensive coaches who are great with clock management. Andy Reid's the weird outlier who still struggles with clock management, even though he's a great coach. He's probably going to be a Hall of Fame coach. But defensive coaches, Sean, don't focus on the clock. They focus on down and distance and getting their team off the field. So defensive coaches, for me, aren't great with clock management just by the nature of the position. They're not worried about the clock. And in the case of Fangio, not only does it feel like he's not worried about the clock, he's not worried about the offense. Like, he's got to widen the lens this year and see the picture. If that means for a series, Ed Donatell can call the plays, let him call
the
plays.
It's not as if he's new at the job.
He's been in your, he's the voice in your head. You've worked with him for, like, gosh, 10 years or whatever it is. You can't trust him to call a few series? He should be a defensive coordinator in the leagues. Like, so why does it happen? I think with defensive coaches, it happens because they never have had to worry about the clock. They're worried about getting off the field, but he has to be better about it. No excuses. The clock management of that Titans game last year, I don't even want to hear a rational explanation because there's not one.
No. You can't make these mistakes.
What? That was a mistake that cost them a win. And what you can't have that. You can't, when you're a team that's on that 8-9, 9-8, 10-7
you
bubble,
live in the margins.
You are right on razor's edge. You cannot surrender games on special teams, and you cannot surrender games on clock management.
If you crunch the numbers, you'll see.
The Broncos have not really, I guess, pressed the issue. You know, is there an idea that with analytics, with somebody basically in Fangio's ear, if they know this is an issue, I mean, what can the Broncos as an organization do to intercede and fix it?
Well, I'm assuming...
Especially if this is the norm for defensive coaches. They should have gotten ahead of it, right?
Well, they had Mitch Tanny, their analytics guy, in his ear the first year, and he wasn't comfortable with it. That's fine. He's the head coach. I'm believing and hearing that they're going to have some type of statistical guy available, but I don't think he's going to be saying, go for it, don't go for it. He's just there to provide information. So if that is ultimately Vic's decision, he's got to be better about it, or he's got to allow Shurmur or Munchak, guys who've been head coaches on his staff, to maybe assist in that role. It's no crime in somebody in your ear saying, hey, got to call a timeout. Got to call a timeout after this play. If they get a first here, you know, and they're inbounds, we got to... What's the crime in that? Just get the help wherever you can get it from.
There are two former head coaches on your staff.
Yeah, it can't be, because the problem with Vic last year is he admitted he made a mistake and he kind of, you know, fell on the sword after the Titans game. And then a few weeks later, are you going to change anything with the process? He was like, no, I didn't do anything wrong with it. It was fine. I was like, wait, what? So there's some stubbornness in how he works, which can be fine when you're winning. He needs elasticity in that role. And if he needs some help in it, no crime in having say, hey, I want somebody in my ear at the end of quarters or end of the half and the end of the game. I needed that voice in my ear just, you know, reminding me, hey, get a timeout here. Or if they get this, we do this. There's no shame in that. Just anything that can help, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, clock management. Look, we're sitting right here. Richie Carney's in our ear, right? He tells us when to break. I mean, that's what you do. You get the help. Troy, this has been a tremendous amount of fun. First time we've been able to do a show. It was a really fun time today. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. And it's great to have Denver 7 Broncos insider Troy Rank with us. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Troy Rank and check him out at DenverChannel.com and check out the podcast. Justin Cernod being interviewed in the most recent one. So thanks a lot for the time, Troy.
It was an absolute blast. Sorry, had some car issues that delayed my arrival. But I was here, now I'm gone, I'm disappearing into the wind. But it was an absolute pleasure, Sean.
Well, we're going to hand things off to the drive, obviously. And it has been a tremendous amount of fun. Enjoy the weekend. Have a safe, happy weekend. And we'll be back next week with, well, an ended preseason and an eye towards the New York Giants with a regular season just ahead. For Troy Rank, I'm Sean Drotar. Richie Carney's been in the booth. Thank you very much, Richie. Next up is The Drive on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.